This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Many young people are excluded by age, by gender, by their background, if they're refugees, if they're migrants, if they're women. And that creates the problem that you're trying to serve a community that is not involved in the solution, and that is not sustainable.
That's Haye Achibi, the African Union Special Youth Envoy. Details coming up also. Ebola has spread to a large city in eastern DRC. And Zimbabwe's government says almost 7 million people are facing hunger due to drought. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the head of the World Health Organization warns the spread of Ebola to a large city in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo could have dire consequences. The WHO chief spoke today at a high-level meeting that examined current efforts to continue the growing Ebola epidemic in Congo. Lisa Schlein reports from the meeting in Geneva.
The Ebola outbreak in Congo's conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces is the second largest after the historic 2014 epidemic that killed 11,300 people in West Africa. As the first anniversary of the DRC epidemic draws near, the WHO reports nearly 2,500 people have been infected with the virus and 1,665 people have died. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the effort to stop the spread of the disease has received another blow with the news that the first case of Ebola had been detected in the eastern Congolese city of Goma. He says WHO was informed Sunday that a pastor who had traveled from Butembo was infected with the deadly virus.
The identification of the case in Goma could potentially be a game changer in this epidemic. Goma is a city of 2 million people near the border with Rwanda and is a gateway to the region and the world. We're confident in the measures we're put in place and hope that we will see no further transmission of Ebola in Goma.
But Tedros agrees he cannot be sure of that, and so he says he will reconvene a WHO emergency committee as soon as possible to determine whether Ebola in the DRC poses a global health threat. The co-chair of this high-level conference, UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Mark Lowcock, considers a lack of funding and Eastern Congo's dangerous security environment to be the two biggest threats to the anti-Ebola campaign. Recently, two Ebola responders were murdered in their home in the Congolese city of Beni. On the financial front, he notes less than half of the money needed to run the Ebola containment operation has been received, leaving a funding gap of $50 million. Lowcock warns it will not be possible to get to zero cases unless there's a big upturn in the response.
If we don't get an increase in the funding available, treatment centers are going to close. There will be fewer teams to conduct training or to give life-saving vaccinations. There will be fewer mobile teams available to immediately investigate, isolate, treat, and trace each new case, no matter where the disease pops up.
Participants at the meeting agree on the urgent need to stop the Ebola virus now. They say Goma is a warning that will test the health community's response, preparedness, and ultimate ability to prevent further cases of Ebola in that big urban center. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A regional counterterrorism conference heard that African countries are seeking ways to tackle a significant rise in violent extremism and terrorism. VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
Speaking to reporters on the sidelines of the regional meeting in Nairobi, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said increasing cases of violent extremism and the growing threat of terrorist groups in Africa is deepening global concern.
I want to pay tribute to those African forces, the joint force in Lake Chad, the G5 Sahel and the Amazon, in which so many African soldiers and police agents have perished in the fight against terrorism. But I do believe that we need African forces in peace enforcing and counterterrorism operations to be much more effectively supported than in the past.
The G5 Sahel Joint Force was established in February 2014 to improve regional security among West African countries that face the threat of terrorism, such as Mauritania, Mali, Niger, Chad, and Burkina Faso. AMISOM is the African Union peacekeeping mission in Somalia. The radicalization of youth has raised concerns in many parts of the world, including in Africa. Terrorist groups frequently target young people for recruitment. Haya Chebi from Tunisia is the African Union Special Youth Envoy.
I think we don't lack policies. We have progressive policies in Africa. Now, we're moving towards a progressive, integrated Africa with the African Free Trade Area. But the problem is, first of all, implementation. And second, who is represented in towards these solutions? Many young people are excluded by age, by gender, by their background, if they're refugees, if they're migrants, if they're women. And that creates the problem that you're trying to serve a community that is not involved in the solution, and that is not sustainable.
Chebi, who is also a renowned blogger and an award-winning Pan-African feminist, urges African governments to fully embrace the young in finding sustainable solutions to the problem.
I think there are a lot of things governments can do. One is to engage with youth meaningfully and not tick boxes with them. The second is to support and fund youth-led grassroots organizations. And third, to work in collaboration with communities, to deal with communities as partners, not as beneficiaries of projects or as we are here to save you from violent extremism. No, communities should be the one protecting their youthful population not to go into violent extremism.
In Kenya, the community-based Malaika Foundation is helping communities address the challenges that make individuals more vulnerable to the influence of violent extremist groups. Frederick Ojiro is the foundation's rapid response officer in Western Kenya.
We are also seeing the emergence of policies like the rapid action plans that has been developed in every county in this republic. It's a milestone. That's a milestone. There's also need to also look at the anti-terror law, because as it is now, it has not been able to secure convictions because of the legal challenges around it in terms of evidence. How do we engage the women in a manner that does not put them at risk?
In the light of the daunting challenges, UN officials say there is an urgent need for the international community to support African countries in the fight against terrorism and the spread of violent extremism. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Former South African President Jacob Zuma has denied allegations of corruption, saying he was a victim of conspiracies to end his career, ruin his reputation, and kill him. Addressing a commission of inquiry today in Johannesburg, Zuma said his enemies had a drive to remove from the scene a wish that I should disappear. The ex-South African leader said he has been vilified and has been a victim of character assassination over 20 years. Raymond Zondo, the lead judge in the probe, said the commission is not mandated to prove any case against anybody, but is mandated to investigate and inquire into certain allegations. Zuma was forced to resign from office last year by the ruling African National Congress Party after being implicated in numerous corruption scandals. In one instance, prosecutors accused him of using some $20 million in public funds for improvements at his private estate. Zuma denied accusations that he allowed the wealthy Gupta business family to fraudulently profit from government contracts and select ministers in his cabinet. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. 15 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The head of the World Health Organization warns the spread of Ebola to a large city in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo could have dire consequences. African countries are seeking ways on how to tackle a significant rise in violent extremism and terrorism. And former South African President Jacob Zuma has denied allegations of corruption, saying he was a victim of conspiracies to end his career. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Artists are often at the forefront of social change as they use their work to address difficult political and cultural issues. While audiences are probably most familiar with activist painters, filmmakers and musicians, choreographers have also addressed social issues with their dance companies. Protecting the environment and cultural heritage are the focus of the annual Ballet in the Bush initiative. As Marzi de Klerk reports from Struck River, South Africa, American dancers recently joined international and South African ballet talent in the African bush for the sake of their art and an endangered species, the rhino.
What's her name?
Lacey.
Lacey?
Yes.
Ballet and rhinos are a duet in South Africa's Limpopo province. Every year, dancers from South Africa and around the world, complete with tutus and pointe shoes, do a special enclosure performance for the calves in this rhino orphanage. Cuban-American prima ballerina Adiares Almeida was among the first participating dancers in 2014.
I was scared at first, but then I thought it was fine. It was actually amazing to have them so close. I mean, I came back for the experience, but also because of the good cause of like saving the rhinos, and I think it's just fantastic.
One goal is to promote ballet in the impoverished province with the help of well-known dancers and teachers. Another is to create awareness about rhinos and the need for their protection, especially from poachers. As night fell, about 200 people watched the 5th annual Ballet in the Bush performance. The initiative raises on average about $1,400 every year. About 50 local children joined the professionals for workshops. This year, Limpopo dance student Fran Makamola was one of them.
I enjoyed the show the most. I learned a lot of new things, and I also enjoyed watching the rhino and learning about the rhinos and that they're very special animals and we should care for them more.
Over the years, ballet talents based in the U.S. have also been part of the program, explains organizer and CEO of the South African International Ballet Competition, Dirk Badenhorst.
It shows that there is this working together and willing and wantingness to help achieve in South Africa what they have achieved in the United States of America.
At the Rhino Orphanage, substitute mums help raise and rehabilitate calves at the cost of about $850 each per month. Ari van Devender, founder and director of the Now or Never African Wildlife Trust, says they're here because their mothers were killed by poachers.
They are facing definite extinction if this carries on. So the more people that hear this message, that hear the plight of the rhino, the better.
Partnering classical ballet with everyday issues seems to help the art form revive in Africa. Joburg Ballet's social media campaign to popularize ballet in South Africa won multiple international awards, says Kabelo Moshapalo, executive creative director of the advertising agency TBWA Huntla Skares, South Africa.
What ballet can do is not only inform, but also educate. One piece of content that we did was around the Cape Town drought. And what we borrowed from our African context is the Rain Queen to bring to attention the plight of the environmental damage that's happened due to the shortage of water.
Officials say there has been a decline in the number of reported poaching cases in South Africa. Since declining poaching statistics does not mean victory in the poaching war yet, all efforts addressing rhino conservation are welcomed. Marise de Klerk for VOA News, Sterkrivier, South Africa.
Most people know that New York is a world capital for great theater, both on and off Broadway. Consider the National Black Theater, NBT. For 50 years, NBT has been Harlem's and the world's mecca for African-American playwrights, actors, and directors. VOA's Adam Phillips reports from behind the scenes.
You. Our ancestors are talking to us. They're telling us, if we seek first the kingdom of Africa, all good things shall be added.
That is an Afrocentric celebration led by activist, actress, and producer Barbara Ann Teer in the early days of the National Black Theater, which she founded in 1968, the year civil rights leader Martin Luther King was assassinated. Black activism and rave were at their peak at that time.
America was on fire.
Charlie Lithcott is Barbara Ann Teer's daughter. She's directed the theater since her mother's death in 2008.
All of that was going on when she decided to move her family from downtown, uptown to Harlem, and create communities that could, with the right spiritual environment, also begin to heal this blood memory. Putting these black bodies on stage, telling their unapologetic, raw truth as they see it, was revolutionary.
Then and now, NBT was strongly committed to social justice. Recent productions include Black Girls Are from Outer Space, which celebrates the beauty of black women and girls in light of the Me Too and Black Lives Matter movements.
I'm a pawn in the main criminal's war strategy.
And that's a small snippet of The Peculiar Patriot, Liza Jesse Peterson's smash one-woman show about the impact of the war on drugs and the mass incarceration of African Americans. Here's what one audience member had to say following the show.
It really showed how the prison industrial complex doesn't just affect the inmates, it also affects the families, it also affects the friends. You know, you're taking fathers away from their sons, mothers away from their daughters.
The National Black Theater often collaborates with other New York cultural institutions, such as the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture and Carnegie Hall, whose Great Migration series focused on the northward 20th century migration of African Americans from the rural South. NBT's presentation, Perpetual Flight, The Movement of the Black Body, addresses many other African-American eras as well, from slavery through Reconstruction, the Back to Africa movement, and the Civil Rights movement. Sade Lithcott notes that today, the rapid gentrification of black neighborhoods by affluent whites is raising rents, forcing many longtime black residents to flee yet again.
What we wanted to really demonstrate was that we've actually been in perpetual flight since we were ripped from Africa. And in particular, this idea of migration being multifaceted, having all of these different agitation moments in our history and in our country.
Being black is itself multifaceted, says NBT's longtime artistic director, Jonathan McCrory.
The idea of black can't be monolithic. The idea of African-American can't be monolithic. That's what society wants us to think. But in actuality, the nuance of it is what has to be given its precious space. It has to be very individual, and that's what makes it complicated and also dangerous. Because to not be able to pin it onto something means you can't destroy it, or you can't control it, or you can't capitalize on it. And theater is the one form that holds it all.
The National Black Theater also supports and develops musical theater that focuses on Africa itself.
Okay.
This is a rehearsal of Wildflower, the true story of a young woman who left apartheid South Africa for the U.S. at the urging of a traditional healer. MBT brought Wildflower's African-American creators to South Africa to experience the country firsthand while developing the show. As the National Black Theater enters its sixth decade, Sharé Lithcott is proud of what it's producing, but says that entertainment isn't the only or perhaps even the main point.
What I hope lingers is the spirit of this place. Where are the spaces we can come and cry and laugh and hold each other and be assured that there will be a tomorrow?
That means building bridges to New Yorkers of every race and background.
We live in such a divisive time where everything is being curated for us to be separated. But at the core of it all, we're human beings. That's the secret subversive experiment of the National Black Theater. It is totally black, but it is totally human.
NBT is beginning an ambitious renovation of its performance space. Meanwhile, it is literally taking to the streets. The show, 125th and Freedom, explores Harlem's main thoroughfare with ritual dance and performance that highlight the community's challenges while celebrating its capacity for authentic healing. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Coming up next, on behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batty, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Stand up!